This is the Horse Radio Network.
Taylor Harris Insurance Services. There for all equestrians, amateur and the professional. For all types and all breeds. No matter what discipline or level, Taylor Harris is committed to excellence in serving you and protecting the horses you love. Taylor Harris Insurance Services, your worldwide equine insurance specialists.
This is the Plaidcast. I'm Piper Clem, publisher of the Plaid Horse Magazine, and today I'm joined by co-host Michael Tuckeruck, and we're going to talk a lot about equitation and a few other things.
The Plaid Horse Magazine presents the Plaidcast, the leading weekly podcast for hunter jumpers everywhere.
Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back.
So it is equitation season, and you got to judge your first final with the USEF Talent Search East Finals at USET at Gladstone, New Jersey. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about how that final is different from the other final and finals, and it might favor a slightly different rider?
Absolutely. So it was an honor to be asked by Chris Kapler asked me in, I guess I was at Pin Oak in March, if I'd be interested in judging I always call it the USET finals because that's what it was called when I was riding in it myself back in the day, but it's, I guess, Talent Search Finals. And, you know, it's such a unique final and championship because of all the different phases and aspects that are involved. And it was always my favorite one to ride in as a junior, in part for that reason, and in part because it's the most demanding of the finals where, you know, really, I think, does the best job of separating who's the best rider over the course of that weekend, not just who might be the best horse rider combination on that day. And so basically, you start with the flat phase, and this year they spread it out over 3 days, which traditionally it's gone over 2 days. But our first day on Friday, we did the flat phase, and Chris and I tried to come up with some exercises on the flat that made sense to us and things that we would be doing in our flat work training to get our horses ready to jump. So we asked them to, you know, you have to do the normal talent search flat phase of the lengthening of stride at the trot, lengthening of stride at the canter. We did a collected stride as well. We had them do a flying change in front of the judges box because I feel like that's something that, you know, when you're on course, you're going to have to do a flying change. And oftentimes that's on a straight line. And to be able to control your horse and properly execute the change was something that we looked for. And we did a turn on the haunches as well, each direction. And Chris and I really feel that that is something that can help teach your horse how to turn properly. And we saw, I mean, the complete range of turn on the haunches, from more like a turn on the forehand to, okay, she just reversed to some really nice turn on the haunches. So I would hope, you know, the ones that did it well, that their horses were set up better for the next day, and the ones that didn't do it so well, you know, maybe they need to go home and practice a little bit, because I do know this is not the first final that you've been asked to do a turn on the haunches. I think that was a big part of the test a couple of years ago at Harrisburg, I want to say. So,
yep. And it's been a part of the test at Pony Finals a couple times, at Pony Medal Finals, so they really have no excuses.
Yeah, it for sure. The week before, we went up to, I went to Gladstone, and then this past week after it, I've been, all my riders at home have been kind of working through the flat phase instructions and commands that we were asking, and it was a lot of fun to do that, and even at home, my riders that weekend did our in-barn flat phase competition amongst each other. So one was riding a four-year-old hunter, one was riding a Grand Prix horse, one was riding a jumper, one was riding an equitation horse, and one of the parents was calling out the instructions, and so they were kind of riding along doing their own flat phase at home, which was a lot of fun to just, you know, it's equitation season, and whether we're showing an equitation or not, I think there's something to be learned and taken from this time of year to apply to your own riding. So that was fun. That was the flat phase. And then the next part of it is the gymnastics phase. And something that you see in the gymnastics phase at the Talent Search Finals is, I mean, depending on the year, it can be really some difficult and, in my opinion, often strange exercises that you're asking of the horses and riders that I don't feel have a lot of carryover effects to the sport and what you're preparing your horse for. And so what Chris really wanted to accomplish in the gymnastics phase was treated a little bit like your last school before you were going to go to a show or go jump a Grand Prix or a Nations Cup or something like that. And that's, you know, this is the jumper equitation final. And so I thought a lot of the exercises that we had in the gymnastics phase were things that you would want to do in your training when you're riding in lessons or teaching at home. And so basically we had a course of, you started with a short five to a long five. Then you had, so can you start with a compressed horse and on a shorter stride and then time the lengthening to properly measure the forward five? Then could you regain a little bit of control after your horse has been stretched out and ride an S line and just follow the track and show us that you knew where you were in a bending line across the middle? And then we wanted to simulate a rollback, a little bit similar to what we saw at the Olympics, where the horses and riders rolled back on the that sumo wrestler jump, and a bunch of horses spooked and distracted and unraveled there by just creating a big island of plants and mums and things to distract the horse's eye without being unfair to them, but just to force the riders to really have to focus on the jump and keep their horse with them throughout the turn. And then another roll back on a skinny vertical and show us you can make a proper turn to an oxer, and that turn might be a little bit different to a skinny vertical. And then we had a bit of a scopey in and out that you had to ride strong to, and then a short four stride to careful in and out that you really had to balance your horse at. And then the final fence we ended with was a big Liverpool under a triple bar. And that was in the rider meeting at the beginning of the weekend. That was really the only fence we singled out in the gymnastics phase as far as what we really wanted to see without tipping our hand on the course. We did say there's going to be a long approach to a triple bar with a big Liverpool underneath it to simulate your ride to the open water the next day. And we want to see you ride strong to that jump. And, you know, the reason for that is we want to set the horses up to be confident to jump the open water on Sunday, because that's such a big part of that championship is the water. And that's it's a big part of the highest level of the sport, you know, as you move up in the jumper world. So it's training the horses and training the riders. And I think Chris is such a master of a teacher, and in asking these questions in the course, I thought he really was very brilliant in doing that. And I mean, I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed that night in, you know, we thought we asked some very fair questions and not enough people really nailed it. And for sure, not enough people really rode strong to that triple bar with the water underneath it. And, you know, in the judges box, you're rooting for 90s and amazing rounds, and you want them to really lay it down. And then you're, you know, what's a 95, what's a 96, what's a 94. I would love to have given away those scores, but we just, really, there was one girl, Audrey, she nailed it on gymnastics day. And the others, there were plenty of good rounds, but it was a lot of 80s and 70s that we were sorting through on that day. So, you know, honestly, that night was a little bit disappointing to me, because I just I felt like historically that's a strong group in Gladstone. You've got great horses, great trainers, great riders, and they just, not enough of them really impressed us in terms of nailing the gymnastics course. But we felt like at least we did our jobs to help set them up for Sunday.
So on Sunday, we come in and then we have a regular phase. And then is it, correct me, the top four always switch horses, correct, for this final?
Yes. Yeah. So then on Sunday, you have a jumping round. And what we wanted to create as far as a course, and Chris took the lead on the course. It was largely his ideas, but we've been collaborating on this and with Anthony D'Ambrosio, who helps with a lot of these finals and for sure the Talent Search finals, and just has a wealth of experience. We created a Nations Cup style course that had the open water in it. The first line, it was unrelated, and that was something we brought up in the riders meeting. We weren't going to be counting strides there, because I think that can sometimes be an issue in the finals. And I know that in medal finals on the course, it said that the number of strides, like between 2 and 3, and then maybe one of the other lines is optional. And that's very helpful when you say that, I think, to the horses and riders and trainers, so that they know that, okay, if your horse is better doing 7 strides, then do 7. If it's better doing 9 or 8 or whatever, just make it your plan and do it well. And I think most people that are horsemen and horsewomen would do that if they were riding their horse around the course. But sometimes it's easy to get caught up in these finals atmospheres and think, oh, we have to do 7 there, or we have to do 9 there, because that's what everyone else is doing. Well, if it makes more sense in a really long bending line like that to do 1 less or 1 more, then do that. Do whatever's going to create the best jump and help you answer the questions best in the course later on. So, you know, our first line was unrelated. And then after that, I mean, there were questions in the numbers, in the course. Some were long, some were short. And we did want to see them do those numbers properly and not add or leave out a stride, because you really couldn't. It just would have completely messed up what would have happened after that. And so, you know, there you're really trying to compare apples to apples of, well, this girl did the forward 4 and then the short 5 really well. This one maybe didn't quite get it done, you know, with proper timing or precision. So that's what we were after. And then we wanted to see you ride at the water. We did say in the riders meeting, we were not going to judge the tape on the water. We had enough other things to judge, and fences. Some of these equitation horses, I mean, unfortunately, they just learn to step in the water over time. And we felt like if the rider rode to the water well, they shouldn't be necessarily penalized 4 points for if their horse stepped in the water, stepped on the tape, because it's an equitation horse and we're not at the Nations Cup final in Barcelona, you know. So actually, we were really happy with the Sunday course. And with the level of riding, there was a lot of higher scores, great rounds. We were really kind of picking people apart style-wise and position, which is great. And a lot of them were answering the questions, you know, some better than others, obviously. But it really worked out well. And, you know, in the end, the cream rises to the top and you're dealing with the final 4. And that's a lot of fun, you know, when you get to see them ride over a shortened course over first their own horse and then the 3 other horses in the class that are in the top 4. And, you know, that really was a lot of fun to watch and to judge. And in that final 4, Natalie Jane and Dominic Gibbs really kind of separated themselves as the top 2. And then in the end, Natalie was just, she was the best. I mean, she came through with 4 really, really solid rounds. And we were very impressed with her. Impressed with a lot of the riders, honestly. And I felt I felt way better after Sunday than, you know, Saturday night. I felt a little bit disappointed. I have to say, at the end on Sunday, the way it goes over the weekend, it just kind of has a way of working itself out because of the so many, you know, components to the championship. And I think that's a wonderful thing, you know, where it's tough at medal finals. If you have a little bobble here or there, you're out. Well, I mean, you could probably point to one or two little things here and there over the course of the weekend that everybody that got a ribbon experienced at one time or another, whether it was the flat not being, you know, totally perfect, or gymnastics, maybe a little this or that somewhere. You know, we just wanted to reward, you know, consistently good riding, not just moments of brilliance. And I think the format of the Talent Search Final really helps do that. And it's another reason why it's my favorite final.
Is your horse a hard keeper? Are you tired of feeding three or more supplements daily and still have yet to see desired results? Make feeding simple again with Excel Supplements. Our proprietary camelina oil is easy to feed and covers many of your horse's needs. With as little as 2 pumps a day, this powerful omega oil has been proven to help with joint pain, muscle development, reduce recovery time, and aid in preventing hindgut ulceration while building your horse's top line. Excel's camelina oil is grown and produced by Excel for your animal's overall health. Order risk-free at excelsupplements.com.
Are you wishing you could be more comfortable right now listening to the Plaidcast? I bet you are. You can get all decked out in the plaid horse apparel at plaidhorsestore.com. We have plaid pajama pants, sweatshirts, hats and accessories, saddle pads, and tees of all shapes and sizes. Everything is comfy fit. We go up to 2XL in most items and XL generous fit in other items, and we want everyone to be included and feel welcome and be able to tell from everyone else they see at the horse show that the horse show is the best, most fun, welcoming, inclusive place to be. So come join us at plaidhorsestore.com.
So before we move on to talk about some of the other finals too, one of the things I consistently hear whenever you know, of course, the medal final, the judging will always be complained about. And yesterday, and we're recording this the next day, so, you know, I still have my eardrums are still popped from hearing some certain people screaming at the end game.
lots of whooping.
Lots of whooping and lots of yelling. So, you know, one of the things I always hear is like, and I heard this at Capital Challenge with the dotted line thing. And I say, oh, like this result is, and you can literally say anything and someone will jump on you and go, well, you don't understand how hard it is to judge, and you don't understand how this, and you don't understand that no one wants to judge these finals, and you don't understand that, you know, how much it's like cost these trainers to sit out and not have their own horses in it. And, you know, and it's this like barrage of things, and they make it sound miserable. And then you know, okay, you were disappointed on Saturday night, but, and you're normally pretty cheery about things, but you made it sound like fun and like you wanted to be there and you were excited to watch every single detail and watch how they did the test. And it's just, it's something completely different. It's a completely different perspective than I heard from anyone at Capital Challenge or the medal finals yesterday.
Sure, sure. And hey, look, I wasn't at Capital Challenge, and I watched certainly throughout the week on the live stream. I've watched plenty of the live stream of Harrisburg so far, and watched it, you know, as much as I could yesterday of the medal finals. But I can't speak to what the atmosphere or the feeling was there, but I do know it's high pressure. It's real stakes, and it's generally a thankless job because really the only person that's happy is the winner. And chances are they're not going on social media or screaming to the hills how wonderful the judging is. It's the people that didn't win that are going to be upset about something. And so that can be very difficult for a judge to want to put themselves in that position of knowing that you're in the line of fire, because this is, it's what everybody works for towards, you know, throughout the year or many years to get to this point. And unlike at Talent Search Finals, where it sorts itself out over 3 days, you know, in that class at Capital Challenge or the medal finals, I mean, we cram in so many rounds into the ring and it's one shot and that's it. And things, mistakes can happen, you know, and people's tempers can really flare. And, you know, it's because of the pressure that's involved with the situation. But for me personally, I certainly knew this was a very important event. We've been talking, preparing, working on it since March. Chris actually sat in the judges box with me. I judged a week in Wellington in September when I got to do McClay Regionals again there. And he didn't sit with me for the McClay Regionals, but he did sit with me for a day. I think on Friday it was that we got to do flat classes, metal, McClay, talent search, a bunch of classes to make sure that we worked well together and had some good chemistry in the judges box. And that's really important as well, because, you know, if you're both seeing the riders, you know, positives and negatives in the same light, that really goes a long way to coming up with the best scores you can and ordering the class properly the way you see it. And I think sometimes when you're at these finals and you have teams of judges, and maybe it's a good thing that they come from very different backgrounds, or maybe it's not a good thing and they're just on completely different wavelengths as far as what they are seeing as good or bad in the round. And I guess I think one of the things Capital Challenge likes to do is to have a lot of judges and multiple teams of judges, so that, you know, with enough people's eyes on the class, you end up averaging the scores out, where if somebody sees something that they give them a much lower score, that maybe another panel sitting elsewhere in the ring didn't see it that way and they give them a higher score, you know, it does end up, you know, hopefully getting to a good place in the score or the standings that, you know, several teams of judges could do versus just one or two people sitting in one place. So I do like that. But yeah, I mean, for me, doing the talent search finals, it really was a lot of fun, but we put a lot of work into it. We felt like we were prepared. Obviously, you want it to go as well as possible. You hope that in the end, you know, people are happy with the effort that we put forth, the questions we asked of them in the course. And I think that just varies so much from year to year, depending on who's judging, who does the course. And, you know, we just tried to bring to the table what we could offer. And, you know, thankfully, I think it was pretty well received. And even the people that didn't win hopefully came away from it learning something and maybe trying to apply some of the exercises or the questions that we asked of them into their training in the future. So that was our goal.
Yeah, and I do think for sure that the talent search is a smaller group of riders, and building for that. That group is a little different, you know, building a course for 300 riders that has those same goals of having everyone improve, separate the field, and not get, you know, anyone hurt if possible, is a different challenge than the smaller group.
Really, really hard. Yeah, no. And I mean, absolutely. And I think I have to say, I thought the first round course from the medal finals at Harrisburg was really appropriate. It asked enough questions to let the top ones really show off and nail them. But if you or your horse maybe weren't quite on it, you could still get around and be better for it. And I think it's in the end what everyone's after, but how they go about doing it is very different. And that class is extremely difficult. And, you know, maybe someday I'll have the honor of judging that. But until then, I'll, you know, I'll just try to watch and learn as best I can and be as ready as possible when I take students back there.
Yeah, and I do. They said during the press conference that there were 13 riders with scores in the 90s after the first round. You know, and so there were quite a few who truly nailed it. They took back the top 25 for the second round, and we saw some really nail that second round and move up. Actually, after the first round, the sixth place and the 12th place finishers ended up first and second, so in the whole thing.
Right.
So that was a lot of big motion, and you know, the judges rationalized doing the fourth round, which we historically do not see at medal finals, by having so much motion and so many changing in places. You know, when the top four tested, none of them were flawless, and I think it kind of left some different things up in the air there.
Sure. No, and that's, you know, that's always up to their discretion. And, you know, typically you feel like if the winner is clear, we don't need to do additional testing here. If it's not, well, we got to figure out a winner, and we've got to then off of that figure out second, third, fourth, fifth, you know. So I think that, yes, it ends up being a long, demanding day, but it's always a long day at Harrisburg. And I think, again, it just goes back to, you know, judges want to get it right. And if they feel like they don't have a proper winner, then you have to keep going until you have one. And so I applaud them for doing that. And, you know, the girl that won, Grace Debney, is an absolute phenomenal rider. And, you know, it was, from what I could tell, well-deserved, but again, I wasn't there. I didn't watch the entire class, but, you know, I feel confident that the group of judges there, did their best and got it right. And that's all we can ask for.
Absolutely. And I learned something that I didn't know about the rule book, is that Eleanor Rudnicki had a little bobble in McClay Regionals and didn't end up getting through to McClay Finals. And it's in the rule book that if you are the top four at talent search, you get an automatic buy into McClay Finals. And she was sixth place. She had a great talent finals weekend.
Yeah.
And earned sixth place overall. But also, if you are in the top 10 in the USEF medal, then you also get a buy. So she earned third place overall in the medal finals and was able to earn a bye and a place at McClay Finals, which I didn't know that was in the rule book. So that interested me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, she really impressed us at Gladstone. I believe they announced she's only 15 years old, but we mentioned her to Ann Krasinski, who was there for the ribbons presentation, about how impressed we were with her riding. And she wasn't quite there to get into the final four, but she was close. And the fact that she's so young, and I feel like I read afterwards that was her first talent search finals. I don't know if it was her first medal finals or what, but
yep, she won the Taylor Harris. I don't know if that was last year or the year before. The dates are blurring, okay. But I think it's her first year doing all the big stuff.
Yeah, no, she's a beautiful rider, and that horse is just incredible that she rides. I love the horse. So kudos to her and to her trainer, Barry Porter. They're doing an amazing job, and that girl has a very bright future ahead of her.
Absolutely. Oh, I just looked up. She won the Hamill Foundation 3-3 medal last year. So.
Oh, nice. Well, so there's an example of, you know, the pipeline or the stepping stone of equitation working as far as the creation of these 3-3 medals and these 3-3 finals to give younger riders an opportunity to go to the finals without it being, you know, the biggest 3'6" you've ever seen in your life, which sometimes can feel that way when you walk out there and you're walking the course at Harrisburg for medal finals. And you get in these pressure situations against a group of your peers that are at a similar level in their riding, and then be able to learn from that and move on and take the next step, you know, in the years after that. And so I think she would be a prime example of an excellent, notable graduate of 3-3 medal that I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if she wins McClay finals this year, but failing that, I wouldn't be surprised if she wins the final in one of her remaining junior years.
Absolutely. So it's exciting, and it's exciting to see, you know, kids shoot up the rankings and you know, not maybe have the most traditional track. I mean, or find that right trainer that really pushes them over the top. And we saw Skylar Weierman in the top four also for the USEF medal. She won Talent Search West finals in 2020. So she's ineligible for the Talent Search East. She's still after the other medals, and she's, her mom's a trainer, and it's great to see these kids that are working really hard and riding anything and everything and having the success like that.
Absolutely. And I think that if you want it bad enough and you work hard enough, you'll find a way. And I think just going back to the talent search itself, I think putting yourself in a position to volunteer to ride other horses, to earn, you know, the opportunity to ride other horses in your own barn, to, you know, give yourself the opportunity to flat an extra horse or to maybe take a lesson or a flat lesson or jump some Cavalettis or whatever, you know, to just keep working towards it. It sets you up for hopefully more and more chances that might come your way. And, you know, whether you use that to your advantage going forward, just figuring out different horses in your riding career, or that's something that comes in handy because you made the final four ride off of a final, everybody's different, but it's only going to make you a better rider, and largely because you've put in the time and the effort and the work. And I feel like a lot of these kids have, and it was a lot of fun to see it and to judge it and to, you know, get some feedback afterwards. And it was inspiring to want to continue to get better in my own riding and my own teaching. And it's just fun seeing a lot of good riders and amazing horses answer questions that you've presented to them and do it under the spotlight of the big pressure finals. So it was something I love doing, and hopefully I get the chance to do it again at some point in the future.
Let's switch gears. What do you all have coming up this fall and this winter? What do the rest of your season plans look like going forward?
So right now we are at Brownland. There is a really nice relaxed show that, depending on the year, I'm at indoors at Harrisburg or Washington or Kentucky, or maybe I've, with a handful of horses, or otherwise I'm at Brownland with a huge group of horses. And for me, huge is 15. I don't ever need a business the size of Andre's or someone like that. But we're here for this week. There's a nice show and a 50,000 Grand Prix. Should be a nice class for one of my horses. And then next week we head out west and we go to California and do the Sunshine Series at Thermal for a couple weeks, and then Vegas to end the year. And we're really excited about that. We've used Vegas the last few times we've gone as a nice year-end goal to work towards. And I love going out there a couple weeks early and showing in Thermal, and it's just a different scene, a different group of people, and I'm really excited to see what all they've done to the facility there, because it looks on social media to be very impressive, and in talking with people that have been out there, they're really loving it. And so it's been, I want to say, I didn't go out in 2020, so it's been 2 years now since I've been out to show in California, and I'm really excited to check that out. I know you've been out there, haven't you, lately?
Not since the winter, not since regular circuit, since March. So okay. I've seen online some of the upgrades, and they planted a lot of flowers and changed a lot of footing. And
right. And I think they've even made an equitation stadium out there, and there's a grass Grand Prix field and all kinds of improvements to see. So that'll be exciting. And it's just, it's a nice, again, it's a nice change of pace for us to go out west, and I love the dry air. So I've had enough humidity.
Me too.
Although finally, we're in Tennessee. I don't know how it is where you are.
Harrisburg has been hot and humid, which is like so wrong. It's so wrong. Someone was like, isn't that dusty there? And I was like, no, you can like see the humidity inside. So I can't wait to get back out west. I'll go to Vegas and then out for the winter, probably per usual.
How did you like the upgrades at Harrisburg, the second ring and some of the improvements they did there? Talk to me about that.
I thought it was amazing. One of the moms said to me, she's like, did it never occur to them to put flowers in the ring before this year? And I was like, maybe not. I thought the upgrades are amazing. There's so much more space to ride. People still complained about how much space there is to ride because we can't help ourselves as a community. I think they did different timings for things. And if you were there with your jumpers, you had times that you could ride the jumpers, and things were never crowded, but also some people didn't, you know, thought that there were other times that they should be able to ride that they weren't able to, which is literally the only complaint I've heard. That food's been revamped. Everything's amazing. And it's a show play show. Everyone feels welcome and at home, and you know, there's just great places for pictures, and you know, every detail has been attended to. So it's really amazing. It feels like the history and the charm, but it has so many more new facets, and it's really cool to see it revitalized and people excited. I think people thought that they might have some free time with two rings, and it really expanded already like a liquid to fill its container. It doesn't feel crowded, but I know that the trainers were busier for sure than they thought they were going to be. And I think people might need to realign like how they do their help, or, you know, how they, you know, manage their, you know, assistants. And, you know, when you've been going to Harrisburg forever and can see every client showing as a head trainer, and suddenly, you know, you're making decisions that you've never had to make here. So I think a lot of people have some business stuff to sort out, but the footing was amazing. So much more places, you know, to ride. I thought that the courses were lovely and the jumps were really decorated and inviting. And we just saw beautiful trips the whole time. And, you know, and people getting up, you know, for sure, still people were getting here at 3 or 4 in the morning. But, you know, that's better than like midnight when there's actually no place to ride. And every year I've been here for medal finals, I've seen, you know, accidents in the schooling ring and stuff. And that stuff was all pretty eliminated. Like, people had enough space to be safe, and I think that part of things is huge.
Yeah, that's great. And then how about the surprise hors d'oeuvres that were served to people? Did I see that in the schooling area? Or, I mean, that looked like kind of a nice touch.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is not a surprise to anyone who's been to a Pat Bile horse show. You are well cared for when you get to show with Pat. But yeah, every day from 4 to 5, they had servers come around and give everyone hors d'oeuvres. Most days it was bacon wrap something, which I'm a huge fan of. So that was nice. People were excited again, which, you know, it's been a while since people were excited at Harrisburg. And then there's a lot of passion at this horse show, and that's one of my favorite things. And sometimes that passion turns a little bit, but it all comes from a good place and all of us caring and want to perform our best. And it's always fun to be here and hear everyone's opinions and see everyone try to peek and see what they've got.
Right. Well, that's awesome.
So we'll take a quick break here and be back with our guest, Alicia Harlov.
Just because the temperatures are starting to heat up doesn't mean that your horse has to suffer the effects of heat stress. The most innovative technology to manage heat stress and exertion in horses is finally here. This summer, Vitalize brings you a product unlike any other on the market, Vitalize Blazen. The proprietary blend of proven ingredients found in Blazen support blood flow and cooling, promote cellular hydration, enhance exercise tolerance, and help support stamina, especially when temperatures are elevated. Don't get beat by the heat this summer. Visit VitalizeEQ.com to learn more about Blazen and the other products in the Vitalize line.
Don't you love opening your mailbox and seeing something in there you actually want? Something in there that isn't a bill, political mail, or a donation request? Something you want. subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine, and we'll deliver that feeling 9 times a year. That's right, you can subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine. That way you'll never miss an issue. Sign up at theplaidhorse.com.
Alicia Harlov is a full-time hoof care provider based out of Massachusetts. She focuses on getting to the root cause of hoof issues and lameness and considers the horse's diet, health, work, and living environments when working on a horse. Her interest in these factors contributed to starting a podcast of her own called The Humble Hoof, where she interviews vets and farriers around the world about hoof health and soundness. Welcome to the podcast, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited to be on.
So we're very excited to see you at Equine Affair, and you can come visit both of us together there in November. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you got your start with horses and why you wanted to become a hoof care provider?
Yeah, I mean, I started riding when I was 7, so I've been riding for a while. But my current horse that I have, I bought in 2014, and shortly after I bought him, he was diagnosed with navicular disease. And I was just devastated because the information from the vet at the time was that my horse would need corrective shoeing, injections. She mentioned a neurectomy. And she also said that none of these things were a silver bullet. And eventually he would probably have to be retired or euthanized from this issue. And I'm really stubborn. I don't like to just accept what's given to me as fact or as the only way to go. So I started researching all I could and ended up flying to a navicular rehab facility in England called Rockley Farm to learn what they do there. When I came home, I shadowed a handful of amazing farriers that put up with a ton of questions for me. I flew all over to clinics, courses, mentorships, you name it, all over the country. And finally, I became certified with progressive hoof care practitioners. And all of this was basically just to help my own horse. Like, I wasn't originally thinking I was going to go into this as a career. But once I got my gelding back into work after his diagnosis and doing pretty well, I just became so passionate about giving hope to others and trying to encourage others in their hoof care journey that I eventually left my full-time job as a public school teacher to do this.
Sounds incredible. And I really respect your passion to go out there and, you know, become more educated and learn about it and have it start with your own horse and now grow into your life. It sounds like you've been to some amazing places around the world. Are there certain things that you could maybe point out that that might be interesting to us and the listeners as far as certain ideas or trends or patterns or ways of doing things in Europe with feet there, horses' hooves versus in America? Or what are some themes that you've noticed in your travels?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I picked up there was, and I don't know that this is common everywhere in the UK, but something that was impressed on me was stall rest was used very rarely. So even if a horse had an injury that maybe in the States we would warrant stall rest, over there, they sort of believe that, you know, what they rehabbed with is what they rehabbed to. So if you're forcing them to limit their movement during rehab, then, you know, that has its own set of issues, whether that's affecting adhesions or calcification in the soft tissue or fibrosis or anything like that. So they incorporated a lot of purposeful movement in their rehab. And that's something that I just didn't hear a lot of back then, you know, in 2014 in the States, and something that I saw be really effective at rehabbing these horses in the UK. And something I did learn there as well was the effect of diet on hoof health. And obviously, we know that nutrition is super important in many ways for horses. I mean, you know, a healthy horse from, you know, gaining good nutrition is going to have ideally a healthy foot just because their whole body is getting the nutrients it needs. But those are two huge things that sort of set me on that path that I originally got from going to England, that I did find a handful of places in the United States are also doing that same kind of thing. But I first heard of it there.
No, I think that's really interesting, and just some controlled movement, like walking on the treadmill or even tack walking early on in rehab situations can often be very beneficial. To talk a little bit more about the nutrition, I mean, there's a million supplements and hoof supplements out there. Help us maybe sort through some of that a little bit as far as what might be a good thing to make sure our horses are getting to make their foot as healthy as it possibly could be in their feed or in their supplements or in their hay, in their diet in general.
Yeah, I think this is such a huge topic because obviously, you know, hay around the country is going to have slight variations, and horses are going to vary in what they need in their diet based on their age and their workload and their medical issues. But time and again, with every single client that I work with, I often am called in because an owner wants hoof rehab. So even if these horses are in work, even if they're a hard keeper versus an easy keeper, I tend to start at, you know, bringing it down to basics of starting with forage first. So let's get them on hay first, forage as the main staple in their diet. Let's, you know, back off on the grain and start there and just see what we're doing with baseline. And from there, add in what they need for calories, minerals, things like that. On top of that, based on what ideally their hay test would show. And I've said this a million times, so many people can't test their hay. So many people board their horses. They get in a different load of hay every week. They just aren't able to get a hay test to have it be beneficial to them because they won't have that hay by the time they get their test results. But notoriously across the country and really across the world, hay is very high in iron, and that can actually affect the uptake of copper and zinc in the diet. And that is, copper and zinc is needed for a lot of things. It's needed for soft tissue health. It's needed for healthy hoof wall, healthy lamina connection, healthy frogs. So if you have this iron that's kind of knocking out the copper and zinc, not letting it be absorbed well, then we're going to see results in the rest of the body and in the feet. So I look for, in most of my supplements, a good level of amino acids. So the horse is utilizing protein in the diet, specifically the three limiting amino acids of methionine, threonine, and lysine. I also look for good levels of copper and zinc. I try to avoid things with added iron. Iron deficiency anemia is incredibly rare in horses, and the majority of horses are far exceeding their NRC requirements of iron per day just from their hay. So I try to avoid added dietary iron.
I just want to add in here, this is what my PhD is in. We have no way, us or the horses have no way to get rid of excess iron, which is part of why it's a problem. Like, we have no pathways biologically besides, like, essentially bloodletting. Like, this is what leeches did back in the day. Like, that's what, we didn't know what we were doing, but that's what leeches were doing. Like, besides literally removing blood, our bodies are incapable of removing iron when we have too much.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, it might sound crazy, but I had a horse that had to do bloodletting. I had venesections is what I think they actually called it, where they had to literally just drain. I mean, it was like a gallon of blood a day for, you know, X amount of days to get their iron stores down, because on blood work, they were confirmed to have iron overload. And that can cause, I mean, they're still researching it, but there's been a few studies within the last 10 years looking at the equine model of what excess iron can do in metabolic horses, which is a lot of the horses that I work on, to be honest. I mean, a lot of times I'm working with laminitic horses or foundered horses or horses that have metabolic issues. So it's something they're still looking at. And obviously, correlation does not equal causation. And I'm really careful not to draw conclusions that aren't there. But I'm definitely really careful with how much iron I'm allowing in my own horse's diet.
But, you know, if you look at, like, literally the chemistry of life and the chemistry of our atmosphere and our oceans and stuff, we can relate how much iron is in the oceans to how much iron is in our bodies, because iron is the limiting reagent to, like, life existing, but it's also one of the few nutrients that both too little and too much are of serious consequence to all mammals. And we don't have good ways of regulating either one if we're missing. I mean, our in our bodies, the iron regulation, iron is more intensely regulated than any other mineral.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I just know that I know that it affects, you know, other mineral absorption, and I know that we see too much of it. But yeah, that's really good to know that it's affirmed elsewhere too.
Well, and that's the, all of these ions end up being of similar sizing. So iron can come in and replace other things or leach other things. And that's why it impacts the copper and the zinc so much, because iron can be 2+ or 3+ in the body. And so it can replace 2+ and 3+ ions, which nothing else is really going to get there. You know, you think about all the different things between copper and zinc and calcium and that kind of stuff. Iron can disrupt and dysregulate all those other symptoms in blood, in bone, you know, in pretty much every system and metabolic pathway we have in our bodies.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, if they're already getting so much iron from hay, and I can't even tell you how many owners, like, you look in their water buckets at the end of the day, like they dump out the water and there's like this red stain. And I'm like, oh gosh, can you just kind of like look at how much, you know, get a test and see how much iron's in your water? Because, you know, they're just getting it thrown at them from everywhere. And that's why I tend to cringe if I see horses that are on an iron supplement. I'm like, oh gosh, they're getting it already from everywhere else.
I mean, and we also don't, like, I think it comes back to this conversation of like long-term stuff. Like when we talk about show ring and show results, I think it's really easy for people to, especially people who have funds behind them, to get a little bit of a disposable mentality of, oh, let's get the next horse or something like that. But when you're talking about whole lifetime and whole careers, like regulating their, you know, different parts of their body chemistry and having their hooves be healthy, like this is, it becomes a different game over years. And I think it's interesting, you know, with your horse of, it wasn't even that maybe it was a problem that day. It's how do we prevent this from becoming a problem. And I don't think, you know, in people care or in horse care, we're having that preventative conversation or have enough data to really have preventative conversations in quite the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's my goal. My goal is to get a horse to grow the healthiest foot possible, even if they're totally sound. Like, can we improve the health of their foot, even if they're going really well and moving really well? Like, we want to keep them moving well and performing well for years to come.
Absolutely. Well, if you are at Equine Affair in Massachusetts, you can come to our booth, come to the Plaid Horse booth and meet with Alicia and myself in person. And you can listen to Alicia on her podcast on the Horse Radio Network, also The Humble Hoof. Thank you so much for joining us, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Do you love horses? Becoming a member of Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation is a great way to give back to the horses and ponies you love. Donate today. Visit www.grayson-jockeyclub.org. That's www.grayson-jockeyclub.org.
Have you ever wanted to learn about horses in the equestrian industry and get college credit for it? Check out my online college credit courses at theplaidhorse.com/college. Check out theplaidhorse.com/college today for more information.
Well, Michael, the other thing I wanted to mention is that you, in fact, had a scribe at Talent Search Finals, which I don't think you've really judged with a scribe before. So I want to hear all about that. And I also want to throw in there that so many people said to me or commented on my stuff online that our sport will never change and we'll never get scribes. And then here we go. We had a final that already had that under control and was already ready to do that. So how did that change or impact your judging experience and your ability to watch every rider?
I loved it. I mean, leading up to that, I know that was going to be part of the deal in our judging, that we would have a scribe provided. And I was just kind of thinking to myself, like, what am I going to do with this person? I've never had a scribe before. I was taught to judge by writing down, you know, my notes as succinctly as I can, coming up with symbols that make sense to me, that I can go back and refer to them to help me sort through you know, the different rounds to try to place them appropriately. And Aaron Keating, who works at the USET, was our scribe for the weekend. And she was able to sit next to us and on her laptop, just help us with our general comments as we are going around. Maybe we're making comments like, this rider's stirrup position is wrong, or she looks stiff, or she looks green, or maybe her position is loose, or, you know, just comments on the round that would help us then come up with a general score. And then also, she was able to help us because when you have to score 55 riders, slot things in appropriately and just more quickly, because when the next rider is standing at the gate and they're anxious to go in, and you got to keep things moving. And I mean, thankfully for us, we only had 55 riders that had, you know, medal finals, you got 230 at Capital Challenge, you've got all kinds of classes day and night to get through. And so you want to keep things moving. You know, the scribe really was a wonderful thing to have. And so when we were thinking, okay, this rider was an 80. All right, well, you've already got an 80. All right, well, what were some of the comments that we said about our 80 that we already have? Oh, yeah. So she was this, she was that, this and that. All right, well, we like it better or we like it worse. Well, do we have a 79.5? Do we have a 79.75? Or do we have an 80.25? I mean, just things like that to help with the general bookkeeping of judging and scorekeeping of judging, but also the writing. And you know, you want to be able to spend as much time watching the round, not looking down at your card from start to finish. And I think every judge is human. They're always going to miss things, but they are trying to do the best they can. And I think having a scribe really allows you to do the best possible job you can, because I mean, I'm making little notes and little symbols as you're going along. And it did take me a little while to get used to having the scribe, but then once I did, it felt very freeing, honestly, that I can just spend more time. I don't need to write words down on my card because Erin's typing them down on her computer next to me, and I can go back and refer to them at any point that I need to ask her. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a way for it to become more common in the hunter jumper world. I know it is in the dressage world, but I think it would do a lot of good to the judges. And then I think, you know, maybe there's a way that you could also give those comments to the riders at the end of the class to give them more than just a score to go home with, to say, well, we thought you were very solid. We thought you rode this line great, or that line not so well, or your position needs this or that. You know, I think that might be more beneficial and educational to riders than just, we gave you a 77.5 and you ended up in 35th place.
Hello, this is Dr. Marty Adams, equine nutritionist for the Legends line of horse feeds and supplements. Horses can be very thin-skinned due to breed and clipping and burn a lot of calories during performance activities and in the winter to stay warm. You can help your horses replenish those calories with Legends Fortified Pelleted Rice Bran. Legends Fortified Pelleted Rice Bran is an extruded 18% fat supplement. It's designed for show horses, performance horses, and hard keepers. This easily digestible extruded pellet supports muscle development and hoof condition and blends very well with other grains to help enhance your horse's feeding program. Try Legends Fortified Pelleted Rice Bran out for yourself. Take advantage of our $3 off per bag discount through November 30th. Print your coupon at legendshorsefeed.com.
Get ready for book 4 of Show Strides, the Plaid Horse's very own book series for young readers. The latest novel, Testing Friendships, is available to order now at thepladhorse.com/books. In the newest book, the Oaks riders are focusing on their goals for the fall. Tally gets the ride on her first project horse, Mac looks to build on her success from Pony Finals, and newcomer Maggie joins Ryan's Field Ridge team as she looks for a horse or pony of her own. but one moment of carelessness in the ring will change everything for all three girls. Visit thepladhorse.com/books to order.
The Horsemanship Radio podcast is dedicated to the advancement of great horsemanship throughout the world. Monty Roberts often stops by to present on this podcast, hosted by his daughter and legacy strategist, Debbie Roberts-Laux. The show includes segments, tips, and interviews exploring effective training centered on the well-being of the horse. This multiple award-winning podcast has 1.6 million downloads to date. Horsemanshipradio.com, sponsored by Hands On Gloves and Monty Roberts University.
You can find links to today's guests and show notes at thepladhorse.com/listen. You can follow the podcast on Facebook. Just search for the podcast or the Plaid Horse Magazine on all the social medias. You can subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine in print at thepladhorse.com/subscribe. You can have all the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go using the free Horse Radio Network app for iPhone and Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. You can also listen on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Thank you to our sponsors, Taylor Harris Insurance Services, and I will see you at the ring.